The pros and cons of CMP's proposed transmission line through Western Maine. Tomorrow evening, Maine's Public Utilities Commission holds its final public hearing about the proposed 145-mile and $950 million plan to build a high-voltage transmission line through Western Maine. The line would carry electricity from Hydro-Quebec to homes and businesses in Massachusetts as part of a clean power initiative in that state. Groups in Maine are lining up on both sides of this issue. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will discuss the New England Clean Energy Connect project. We'll look at what it would mean for Maine's economy, environment, ratepayers, and other energy suppliers. What do you want to know about this controversial plan? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Central Maine Power plans to build a 145-mile-long, high-voltage transmission line through four western Maine counties. The project is called New England Clean Energy Connect. Today, we're going to discuss that proposal and its potential impact on Maine. Joining me in the studio, John Carroll. He is the Director of Corporate Communications for Avangrid. Is it Avangrid or Avangrid?
I say Avangrid.
You say Avangrid, okay. For Avangrid and the spokesperson for the CMP project. Barry Hobbins is the public advocate for the state of Maine. And joining us from our Bangor studio is Matt Wagner. He's with the Say No Coalition, which opposes the transmission corridor. As always, we want to hear from you. What are your questions about this major project? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. With us now, though, Fred Bever. He is a reporter and producer with Maine Public News and has been covering this issue for a while now. First, Fred, give us some background on the New England Clean Energy Connect project.
So this is really a response to an initiative from the Massachusetts state government and their governor, Charlie Baker. They passed a law several years ago requiring the procurement of a certain amount of renewable energy to fulfill their renewable and CO2 reduction goals. That included 1,600 megawatts of offshore wind. It also included 1,200 megawatts of renewable energy, I think with a bit of a thumb on the scale for Hydro-Quebec energy, and that's where this is going to come from. It's going to come from the massive dam system up in Canada and be sluiced down through Maine to Massachusetts consumers. There was another project called Northern Pass, which originally won the bid for Massachusetts, but then its permitting process got bogged down with a key denial that made it clear that they wouldn't be able to meet the timelines. And so the Massachusetts RFP crew turned to CMP's proposal. And that's what got us here today.
Who owns the land, those 145 miles?
Well, it's various owners. CMP owns some of the land. They also secured rights of way for the entire corridor. They did that even before, I think, the bidding process was over. That includes about 53 miles of new corridor running from Beatty Township down towards Lewiston through Franklin and Somerset counties. That's going to be about 150-foot wide corridor plus another 150-foot undeveloped buffer. John Carroll can correct me later if I get any of this wrong. Then when there's the rest of it is on existing corridor where there's existing transmission lines owned by CMP, that would some of that's 300 foot wide. Some of it's as much as 500 feet wide. This could add, I think, an average of about 75 feet in width to that corridor. So it's all controlled by CMP at this point. There's no question of eminent domain or any, you know, sort of heavy handed land acquisition like that.
All right. And John was nodding. You've got those facts right, Fred. Who supports the plan? Who opposes the plan?
Well, there's a big grab bag on both sides. On the support side, you have, of course, Central Maine Power. Just today, a coalition of groups held a press conference, including the State Chamber of Commerce, the IBEW Union, a few other groups, Chinbro. Was one of them. The city of Lewiston, I believe, was in on this press conference showing support. And for most of these, it's all about jobs. I think CMP says there'll be roughly 1,700 jobs created during the construction period, several dozen after construction is done. So it's a big investment in infrastructure, and the forces that could benefit from that are getting behind this. On the other side is a broad coalition of environmental groups, impacted landowners, some rafters who are opposing it, particularly because it's going to cross the Kennebec River Gorge, where there's a lot of rafting activity. I should mention that there's some rafters who support it and actually did a deal with CMP in which CMP would provide up to $22 million in value in terms of recreation trails and a recreation center and other investments in sort of natural resource-based economic development. And so that sort of split the rafting community up in the Forks area over whether this project is a good or a bad idea. You have the Natural Resources Council of Maine is against it. You have the Appalachian Mountain Club is against it. It would cross the Appalachian Trail in several places, or John Carroll will tell you that the Appalachian Trail actually crosses CMP's corridors. It would impact some of the scenic views for the Appalachian Trail, so that's why you've got the Appalachian Mountain Club against it. You've got the big national, international environmental camping goods group, Patagonia Company, has come out against it. Trout Unlimited, these various groups. One group that I'll mention that so far is not against it per se is the Conservation Law Foundation, which has been a long I don't know if opponents of big energy plans, particularly those that include expanding access to natural gas through the Northeast. The Conservation Law Foundation hasn't actually weighed in for or against yet. They've been participating in the proceedings. But I think that they may be trying to do a deal with CMP, and maybe we'll hear some more about that. Some of the towns that CMP had sort of lined up originally, they went to the county and local governments all up and down the corridor before this was even in the bidding process, and got some support from those, particularly because of property tax revenues that will be created in those communities. Since then, as there's been more publicity around it, some of those towns have stepped back and said, wait a second, we're not so sure we're for this. And some of them have come out against it. I believe Carrotunk, West Forks, small communities are that are now looking for intervener status in the proceedings as they go along.
Well, let me ask you that. Small towns who say we don't want it, the small towns it would pass through, can they stop it from coming through their community?
Well, they can't stop it. The jurisdiction here lies with the Public Utilities Commission of Maine and the Department of Environmental Protection of Maine. There is a federal permit that needs to happen, and an international permit, I think. It's called a presidential permit. In addition, Massachusetts regulators have to weigh in on it as well. So the towns have standing, and they've gotten standing, although they've sort of come to the table late. And so there'll be some issues that they're not allowed to weigh in on. So they can tell the regulators what they want. But as far as I know, that's the limit of their authority here. I said DEP, I also should mention the Land Use Planning Commission also has jurisdiction here for the unorganized territories. Another group of opponents, and they have a big firepower here, is competing generators who are worried that they will become less financially viable with this big influx of energy from Hydro-Québec.
All right, and that was my final question for you. What does this mean for solar and wind power suppliers in Maine?
Well, so the renewable energy groups have gotten in on this as well, and they're opposing it, and you may have seen some of these no CMP corridor signs around. It almost looks like a campaign for something. But there's nothing on the ballot around this. They're just trying to raise awareness. They're concerned that basically there's been a bottleneck for the development of new land-based wind energy in Maine because the transmission system just doesn't have any headroom, is actually the technical term for it, for more energy coming from land-based wind in Maine. So it's very expensive to build new transmission to serve that. The renewable energy providers argue that because CMP has chosen an HVDC, a high-voltage DC line, rather than an alternating current line, that's really difficult to get transmission from remote windmills onto an HVDC line. So they're saying this is like bringing all this energy in, and it's going to crowd out their ability to continue to develop the wind sector in the state of Maine. And so they are putting some money behind trying to oppose this.
All right. Well, Fred, thanks so much for joining us. I understand you're working on a story about the gubernatorial candidates in the transmission line.
Yes, I've asked them all that question and just waiting to meet with Sean Moody today, the Republican candidate, to find out his views on this. And I'll be reporting back on that later today.
All right. Well, thank you. Fred Bever, a reporter and producer for Maine Public News, who has been following this issue. John Carroll, I'm going to turn to you. This transmission line, as Fred said, would provide power to the people of Massachusetts, not Maine. So what are the benefits for Maine?
Well, you know, before you start talking about the benefits, you have to, and the solution, you have to talk about the problem we're trying to solve, because the benefits for Maine are part of the benefits for the region. And if Maine is definitely part of a region, we're part of a single grid and part of a single market that needs to replace a significant amount of its generation over the next 10 years. So whatever you feel about any particular source, we're part of a region that needs new generation. Nuclear plants, coal plants, oil plants are retiring. We have to replace those. We're also part of the same globe, and we need to replace those resources with clean energy as a responsible response to climate change. So that's why we're doing it. So before you judge the line at all in terms of the pluses or minuses, you have to understand what the problems we have to solve. What it does mean for Maine has tremendous number of jobs during construction, 3,500 at the peak of the construction. That's direct, indirect, and induced. Maine will enjoy the energy price suppression benefits that all of New England will have. That means Maine consumers will save between $40 and $45 million a year for the next 20 years of the contract. In Maine, the host communities will get about $18 million a year in property taxes. There's a clear, strong effect on our economy, and Maine's gross domestic product will actually be stronger by about $23 to $25 million a year for the next 20 years of the contract just because of these lower energy prices. And we share in the clean air benefits. It's like taking, I think it's 56,000 cars off the road in Maine. Those are removing emissions that are linked to our own energy use. So there's jobs, there's clean air, there's taxes, and all of that at no cost to Maine consumers.
Matt Wagner, you're one of the leaders of a group opposed to this. What are your primary objections to this project?
So, yeah, my name's Matt Wagner, and thank you guys so much for having me on the show today. I really appreciate it. We have a variety of objections, and so I'm the spokesperson for a group of consolidated interveners in the LUPC and the DEP hearing. We found out about this project fairly late. Only this April did we know that this was coming, and we're opposed to it largely for the destruction of the scenic experience in the Upper Kennebec River Valley. The power line's going to be crossing the Kennebec River Gorge, where thousands of people come to recreate a year. It's sort of the most accessible wilderness experience on the East Coast, you know, certainly in northern New England. And it's really the heart of the local economy up there. And there's been, you know, a variety of claims about this providing more recreational opportunities or building a nature center to mitigate the loss of people's access to the outdoor experience that's there now. Those are pretty dramatic. The Kennebec River Gorge area that would be impacted is sort of the last remaining. It's a little less than 6% of the total river length that's not already developed. It doesn't have roads or power lines over it, and people come there to experience that really from all over the country. Losing that would be a loss not just for Maine but also for New England, and I think as people have come to recognize that, they've moved to join the fight against this. Also, the area where the new corridor would be built is, you know, almost unparalleled in beauty. The Boundary Mountains are gorgeous. And this would really be a visual blight. That's a national scenic byway. And, we worry that there's no economic analysis of what this is going to do to our local community in the permitting process right now. We're really not represented, even though we voted as communities, you know, overwhelmingly to oppose this. As you said, the permitting process doesn't really take that into account.
Barry, your role as public advocate is to look out for the interests of ratepayers in Maine. Do you believe that this project benefits them?
Well, it's a very delicate balancing act, and I think both sides in their discussion so far, and I think Fred has, as always, done an excellent job giving it the institutional history of the whole issue itself. I think what we are, as the Office of the Public Advocate, are interested in is if there is going to be this, and again, this is the decisions up to three individuals who were all appointed by Governor LePage to serve as the Public Utilities Commissioners. And I have to look, and fortunately for me, I have some political background. I try to assess what happens if this project passes. What can we do as the Office of Public Advocate to significantly mitigate some of the outstanding issues that have been very well done as far as interveners in their presentations before the commission so far, and those who support the proposal, such as Central Maine Power Company and some of the other auxiliary individuals.
Well, John used the number $40 million, I believe, per year to benefit ratepayers. Do you believe that that's an accurate number?
I believe that number is less. The Liberty, the entity, Linden Economics, has taken a look at it as the outside consultant for the Public Utilities Commission, and I think they've come in with a lower number. As far as the jobs are concerned, we like to have jobs in Maine, but remember, these are temporary. Most of the jobs are temporary jobs. I think the Linden Economics analysis brings forward, I think, all of those particular issues. But again, what our interest is to make sure that there will be with due diligence, make sure that if this is going to be built, then we want to make sure that they comply with all the restrictions that they, in fact, meaning the applicant now, Central Maine Power Company, and that's an issue which we feel very strongly in our office and have advocated for the applicant to be later transferred if, in fact, they are they've successful for an affiliate that would be a stronger affiliate than Central Maine Power Company. What we don't want to do is an Office of the Public Advocate have the ratepayers have contingent liability if something does go wrong. So our approach has been we want to make sure that there be an affiliate that would be affiliate of hopefully Avangrid, even so more so than Central Maine Power Company, because they are a strong financial institution that could withstand significant issues that might arise on a contingent liability factor. So that, in a way, we're like the Maytag repairman so far. We're kind of in the middle with all the generators and the environmental groups and Central Maine Power Company and the industrial, the very effective industrial lobbying group that is involved. But so far, we've made some good constructive suggestions to make the project more viable from an environmental standpoint, from the standpoint of prudence issues, and we'll see what happens. But I can tell you that there's always room for discussion, and this is going to be a long process. This started out at the end of July. I had been on the job for a total of 19 days when this application was put forward, and quite frankly, I didn't think this project at the beginning would end up as the bridesmaid, and end up in the end being chosen. I thought for sure that New Hampshire was going to be chosen.
All right. Well, we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions about CMP's power transmission project in Western Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
record number of openly LGBTQ candidates are on the ballot this November.
What we're doing, I think, is bigger than we realize oftentimes. And the impact we're having on young people is more significant and deeper than we can conceive.
I'm Ari Shapiro, a roundtable of LGBTQ candidates, plus the Secretary of State's visit to Saudi Arabia, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Election Day is approaching, and Maine Public News has much of what you need to be informed about the candidates and the issues we'll be voting on in November. And we'll have more in the days ahead. It's all at mainepublic.org/yourvote. You'll find analysis of the important issues, in-depth interviews and profiles of the candidates for governor, Senate, and our two congressional districts, our Maine Calling candidate programs, and our schedule of upcoming debates, which will also be available on demand as soon as they happen. All this and more at mainepublic.org/yourvote, or click on the Your Vote banner on the mainepublic.org homepage.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the debate over CMP's proposed new transmission line. Joining me to discuss this issue, Matt Wagner, who is against the proposal, John Carroll with CMP, and Barry Hobbins, Maine's public advocate. We invite you to join the conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief, please brief, email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I am going to start with an email from Paula. Paula writes, "No one seems to mention the environmental destruction the dams in Quebec cause, often on native lands. So often we ignore the source." Matt, is this part of your opposition to this project?
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. We do have concerns with the Hydro-Quebec proposal. We haven't really gotten a lot of information from them. And yeah, the dams, the methane gas release, the environmental concerns associated with that are certainly important to us. I think the bigger question with the power generated is that this power isn't coming from new generation. This already exists and there isn't an excess of power that's being sent our way. This is power that's currently being sold into other markets in New York and Ontario, and eventually they'll need to build new generation there to replace that power that they're going to be exporting to Massachusetts. They're getting paid more by Massachusetts for this power, essentially, which is what's necessitating this for-profit power line to come through Maine. So I guess the question environmentally for me is really, what would that new generation be in Hydro-Quebec? That's a question we haven't had a good answer to yet.
Yeah, and I think you raise a good and important point, Matt. And John, this is one of the criticisms, but I've been reading. Does this really, you mentioned the health of the planet. Does this really add to the clean energy mix, or will it be diverting that hydropower from one place to Massachusetts?
Yeah, sure. Hydro-Quebec has been very clear that their commitment, and it's a long-term corporate commitment, is that they want to become the battery, the clean energy battery for all of the Northeast. And they have invested over the last 15 or more years in building an enormous set of resources, you know, in terms of dams, generation, and reservoirs. What they have said in Maine and anywhere to anyone who would listen quite clearly is what they are offering to Massachusetts is going to be incremental new green energy, not just to New England, but to the planet. And that's the standard that some people are holding this project up to. They've explained very clearly that just within the last few years, they've added almost 1,300 megawatts of new generation. By 2020, they have another 245 megawatts of generation coming on. They're going through their existing plant and upgrading many of their existing turbines to increase the efficiency. And they're building reserves of power and energy back in their reservoirs. And what they have been able to say, and what CMP has actually offered in testimony, is to demonstrate that this is incremental energy to the planet. And people continually say, and I don't understand, there's no fact behind it, but a simple assertion is this doesn't reduce greenhouse gases. That's what the critics say. They offer no clear evidence, and they reject Hydro-Quebec's very simple, very clear explanation of how their long-term investment and commitment is really going to answer that problem correctly.
But is it a part of the contract for this project that Hydro-Quebec must boost its clean energy mix in relation to this project specifically?
when you treat the contract Hydro-Québec has with the Massachusetts utilities specifically says that it has to incremental to New England. So that's the terms of the contract. So it's New England. And that, if we want to talk about the contract, that's the term of the contract. What Hydro-Québec has said, because other people have said, is it incremental to the planet Earth? And Hydro-Québec has said, yes.
I think that that was an issue that our office looked at, and you know, you can eye both sides. But if you look at the Massachusetts law, which is far-reaching, it is, I believe, going to be the model that other states and commonwealths are going to be looking at. And their contracts must abide by strict standards to make sure that the CO2 emissions, the environmental green stamp, if I may add, and the issue of their whole act, which passed the legislature overwhelmingly, sets a public policy criteria which is very strict. And so that power that's going to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts really has to pass muster much more than many in any state, I believe, than in the country so far. So I'm less critical of the idea because, quite frankly, hydropower is in fact good for the carbon footprint, and it is an area that as you know, we've gone the other way in Maine. We've taken down the dams and the like for energy, but I believe that this project is going to be one that is going to be very strictly complied to because Hydro-Québec have other plans in other states, in other entities.
Matt, before we move on, I want to give you a chance to weigh into the response by John and by Barry.
Yeah, so, I mean, my concern is that transmission lines are a pretty outdated technology, and we've seen, you know, distributed generation sort of start to take its place already, and I think that that's going to increase in the future. And in testimony from people from Jackman, we've seen that CMP has had a hard time keeping the power on up there in Jackman, where the power line travels up a state-maintained highway. In 2017, the odds were in your favor if you bet that Jackman didn't have power on any given Wednesday. And then today, 54,000 customers are without power because it's windy. How will Maine ratepayers be guaranteed that our power reliability will be secure when CMP is now responsible for a transmission line going to Massachusetts when there's a storm? There's no roads following the new 53-mile corridor. There's no access to that area.
Well, John, how do
there
we
might be snowmobile trails.
Yeah, how
what
does
do we
the
do?
Transmission
what do we do
line
when the power goes out?
Yeah, that's interesting. Tell me, and we actually have a question from Gary on Facebook. How long and how wide will the cut area be for this power line? So how do you guarantee that windy night like last night isn't going to knock out the New England Clean Energy Connect transmission line?
I'm still trying to follow the question a little bit, but simply put, the new corridor that we would clear from, I guess it's Moxie Gore across, would be 150-foot wide clear cut. It'll be fully vegetated with scrub shrubs and grasses and maintained in that state, but the cut itself is 150 feet wide. If you add up the entire area of the corridor, it's about 2,200 acres. But the question of how will we maintain this, we'll maintain this with the same practices that we have in place for the rest of our system. This is a high-voltage transmission. We have very specific standards for how we maintain it, and we'll maintain it by the same standards. Comparing this to Jackman is it's really kind of a diversion. We're going to get off the topic, and I think it's more important to stick to that.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling from Rome. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I had a couple questions for John, and I'll take the comments off the air. Several things that have been brought up are no cost to the state of Maine, but if you look at it environmentally, the amount of herbicides and clear cutting definitely have a cost to the environment. Also, the added impact to the infrastructure of all the small towns with all the additional equipment and emergency services that will be needed throughout the operation. And lastly, let's say that the number that the state of Maine is going to get is $50 million per year, how much does that actually break down per meter? Because that sounds like a lot of money as a ratepayer, but if you break it down, isn't it in reality like $2 a month per meter? I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
John, I guess the first question about herbicides being used, will they be used in the corridor to keep trees from growing up around the...
Yeah, our existing practices, and we use this, obviously we have a couple thousand miles of corridor around the state. We have very clear and well-designed practices that involve, once the corridor is cleared, as part of the maintenance there is on a periodic basis every 4 to 5 years, hand cutting and the use of herbicides to control that vegetation. This is not a new practice that we would be introducing in this corridor. That's what we have done for decades. It's very carefully reviewed by the DEP. We're held to very high standards. And we're, you know, it's an appropriate practice given the utility industry, the industry we're in.
And how about Steve's second question about, or his final question there about how much this is really in the pockets of each ratepayer? Is he right? It's going to come down to a couple bucks a month for most.
Well, we have about 620,000 customers. So whether the number is 40 million a year, or he can do the math. The bottom line is this: that the energy savings are something that we're part of throughout the market. But we're, at the same time, there's no price for clean air in this. But I think we should recognize the environmental benefits and the jobs and the benefits, the knock-on effect in our economy.
We'll go to Sandy, who's calling from Keene, New Hampshire. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'm going to direct this to your speaker, Matt Wagner. CMP's credibility is at an all-time low with charges against them for overbilling and fraud, and they're not able to provide adequate service, as you talked about, to Maine ratepayers, and now they want to develop a new project that prioritizes Massachusetts ratepayers. So with this growing opposition to the transmission line, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about some of the main reasons for the growing opposition in towns along the corridor and across the state?
Sure. So I think a lot of the people in the Upper Kennebec River communities already feel that they've given Central Maine Power Company enough over the years, where they've come and dammed the rivers. You know, we host Wyman, Flagstaff, and Harris Station, Harris Station being the biggest hydro project in the state. We've lost a lot. Those dams were built without fish passage, and we've lost sea-run fish. There's been a lot of environmental destruction already. We've lost our forestry business, and the tourism industry is sort of what we have now. It's a huge part of the industry. So the loss of the scenic character of the area is something that we have to fight for. And you see that in how these towns have voted. Moose River, which is a town north of Jackman, 24-0 against this. Town of Jackman, selectmen unanimous to intervene against it. Town of the Forks, 46-12 against it. West Forks, 45-7 against it. Caratunk against it. Does that answer your question?
Thanks, Matt. And John, I want to turn to you about this idea of the scenic views that will be lost. And then specifically the Kennebec River Gorge. At the Kennebec River Gorge, are we talking about going over the river or under the river?
Yes, we're talking about both. Our proposal is that we think it's, from the environmental perspective and a cost perspective and reliability, a better choice to go over the river, and that's what we've proposed from the very beginning. We've also said that, you know, based in part on particularly what our regulators' primary concerns are and the community's response, we have an option to go under the river. So that's an open question, and, you know, we are going to take our cue really from the regulators and in part from the communities. But I want to go back to the question of the presumption that the you know, yes, over the hundreds of years that logging and power have been part of the North Woods picture, you know, Flagstaff Lake, Indian Lake, those are beautiful resources. Wyman Lake, people have camps there. Those are assets in the region. And the entire rafting industry on the Upper Kennebec that we're talking about is a complete function of those dams, and it is a complete function of those resources as part of New England's clean energy picture. If it were not for that dam, or if suddenly instead of releasing the dam every day at 10 o'clock for the convenience of the rafting industry, 10 a.m., if that release were moved to 10 p.m., the industry that really supports a large part of that economy would disappear in a minute. So the notion that region has suffered for the investment in infrastructure, especially clean energy infrastructure, that's a new one. And it's, you know, I think anybody who has a camp on Flagstaff Lake or has enjoyed it would say it's not a blight. They would say it's an asset.
Sandy, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Portland and Richard. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm a supporter of the project, and I believe that we need to accept some changes in our environment to deal with getting more renewable energy. I mean, the heating of the environment, the storms, we need to accept some changes. And a power line that supports, that brings in renewable energy from Canada is a great benefit to our efforts to get more renewable energy.
Richard.
And I think that, you know, I'd like to just mention going over the Kennebec River with a power line. I mean, what John Carroll just said about the fact that all of these rafters climb down over a dam infrastructure to get into a raft, to get on the river. And it's ridiculous to argue that a power line going over a river is going to subtract from the experience that rafters have going down the Kennebec River.
Richard, thank you so much for your call. We do need to go to another break. But first, a word about tomorrow's show. Tomorrow, it will be a conversation about loneliness. You may have heard about recent news reports about the detrimental health effects of being lonely and that it's really become an epidemic, especially among some populations. So you can email your comments or questions ahead of time to talk@mainepublic.org. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Martin's Point Healthcare, dedicated to providing the highest quality care and coverage to the people of Maine. Offering Generations Advantage Medicare plans, learn how you can enroll at generationsadvantage.com. And South Street Linen, dedicated to creating stylish all-season linen clothing for women made in Maine, southstreetlinen.com.
On the next Speaking in Maine, we join Maine conservation voters in Portland.
So if you think that I'm going to let my core values go to hell in a handbasket, then you are going to be alone in your misery.
Former EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy delivers the keynote address at the annual Evening for the Environment. She shares her hope to preserve the natural world for future generations. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
The stories you hear on Maine Public Radio and NPR stay with you. They sometimes keep you from getting out of your car for those driveway moments. You think about them for hours, maybe even days. Maine Public Radio informs you, engages you, challenges you, and inspires you. When you listen to Maine Public Radio, you grow as a person. Maine Public Radio grows with your support. Let's grow together. I'm Erwin Gratz, asking you to help grow the programs that grow you. Please visit mainepublic.org to make your donation today, and thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, CMP's proposed 145-mile-long transmission corridor in western Maine. My guests are Barry Hobbins, who is the public advocate for Maine, John Carroll with CMP, and Matt Wagner with Say No, a group that opposes the project. Give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. John, I want to ask you about the towns that Matt and Sandy were talking about, the towns that have voted no to the plan. How much of a bearing does that have in your planning to be in towns that, you know, some of them unanimously have said, we don't want you there?
Yeah, well, first off, I think, you know, there have been a few towns that have changed their mind, but we still have support from probably 90% of the towns, very strong support from many of them, because they recognize the benefits of the taxes and they recognize the benefits of employment. And many of them also support the policy goal that Massachusetts has and shares with us, and that is we need to do something to have cleaner air. You know, in those communities, you know, what we have found is I think we're bumping up against some interests that have very narrow, frankly, focused interests on an activity that they like. They like to go fishing and not see a power line. They like to go down a river and not see a power line. They want to go to their second home in the woods and not see a power line. I understand how that feels, I suspect. And it's an interesting and really instructive incident case of what happens when you take a major problem, an existential problem like climate change, where we are asking entire continents to change the trajectory of development. We're talking across the globe about stopping burning coal within the next 10 years. And they say, okay, now we have a solution, and this is what it looks like on the face of the earth. It's a power line. And the threshold for some people is, yes, maybe global climate change is a serious problem, but not one that I should not have to see a power line from my second home to solve it. And that's, I think everyone should look at this and say, here's a lesson to how much of a challenge do we face. The International Panel on Climate Change just in the last few weeks said we have till 2030 to get to about 67% of our energy from renewable resources. Today in New England, we're at 20%. We are talking wrenching changes in Maine, in New England, globally. And this is the test of where are people ready to go to solve that problem.
Matt, I'm going to let you respond to John's thoughts there.
Yeah, I think certainly there's some towns that support this, but those aren't towns that stand to lose their local economies in pretty rural areas where we depend on tourism and recreation that feeds that tourism industry. So sure, Lewiston doesn't really stand to lose its scenic integrity because there's a transmission corridor there. Certainly the upper Somerset County does. And also, just to address the climate change imperative, I agree. I live in a net zero home, and I have had solar for 20 years, since before it didn't make sense. I've never known Central Maine Power Company to support renewable energy. I read the paper regularly, and I'm tuned into energy policy issues. Central Maine Power Company has a long record of fighting against solar. It's amazing they've changed their tune now. I'd love to hear more about how they're going to support solar, because there will probably be some great solar legislation.
So, Matt, I'm going to go now to Adam, who's calling from Cumberland. And, Adam, I think that your point dovetails with the one that Matt was just making, correct?
Yes, it does. I find it a little ironic and frustrating that CMP is suddenly concerned with climate change, yet they've really recently blocked good legislation on solar and stood in the way when they could be supporting it. And the PUC's own study that they commissioned showed that solar saved us money. I'd like to hear how they justify that.
Well, I'm not answering for Central Maine Power Company, but I think there are some very good energy that has come out of this debate of this particular issue that really needs to resonate in the state of Maine. This project is a good wake-up call for us to look to the future of what we're going to have residents of Maine as far as whether or not we're going to continue to have the same poles and wires, the same approach, or do we have to look to other aspects of renewable energy. What I'm hoping will happen with all the individuals that are have their positions solidly, for or against, will look to see if they can come together somehow and develop new policy through the legislature, through possibly the next governor of the state of Maine, and that race is wide open, and look to see if we can push the restart button and take another look at a lot of those issues. I'm hoping that Central Maine Power gets it because I've been very critical of Central Maine Power, and quite frankly, I think they're beginning to learn their lessons, and I think they will become better corporate citizens if we continue to have public outcry about service, reliability, and resiliency.
Oh, well, now I'm thoroughly chastised.
I know you are.
I guess I think the danger here is that this is really a debate not about solar, but about net metering, and that's a very different subject.
I agree.
CMP is part of one of the largest clean energy companies in America. We're the third largest wind company in America. We're part of a global company that is probably the first or second largest clean energy company in the world. We're fully committed to decarbonizing our energy system. But I don't want to get into debate about net metering.
No, but I really shouldn't. But I do think that this debate can be healthy for the future to look at how we want our global economy to be and our global climate to be, and same here in Maine.
I want to circle back to something from the beginning of the program. Fred Bever mentioned that the Conservation Law Foundation has not come out for or against this plan and suggested it may be in negotiations with CMP. Is that true, John? And if so, what are the goal of those negotiations? What is the goal?
Well, I'm not part of any kind of negotiations. There is in the PUC proceeding, there is a point where the parties can begin what they call settlement discussions. And so those are going on now. The nature of those discussions, it's known publicly that they're going on, but the policy is not to discuss the specifics of any of those negotiations. So I really can't comment.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Jackson Lab in Bar Harbor. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. This is John Archer, and I work with Jackson Lab, but nothing to do with the energy sector. But I've been studying wind energy offshore for New England and mainly Massachusetts and Maine. And a study done by a group in Boston, it's called the Frontier Group, has come out with offshore wind potential is for Massachusetts 19 times the potential, including all the sites for whales that are critical areas for environment. 19 times the power needs of Massachusetts, and for Maine, that would be 35 times. And so why would we need this at all if we really went for the potential of the wind offshore? And you can see in Great Britain, they've done really amazing things with offshore wind. Why can't we go with that? And we would need the power line. We could bury it to Boston from the waters off of.
Sure, John. Thanks for your question.
Sure. I'm happy to respond to that. First off, Massachusetts is pursuing offshore wind, and I'm very proud to say Avangrid, our parent company in the U.S., was actually selected, and we're moving ahead now with an 800-megawatt wind farm off the coast of Massachusetts. That's an important resource. It has to be a part of the mix. What Massachusetts did, and I think Fred mentioned this earlier, is they very specifically leaned toward a large hydro because the nature of offshore wind or any terrestrial wind, offshore wind or solar, is that they're intermittent. You cannot count on them to be there at every hour of the day. And what Massachusetts has very, I think, smartly done is said we are going to balance a renewable but dispatchable, fully firm and dependable resource like large hydro, and then we'll have these offshore resources that are less dependable in terms of you cannot dispatch them. When the wind is blowing, you have the energy. When the wind is blowing, you don't have it. So it's a balancing act. And as New England goes forward, we're always going to have to look at how do you maintain that balance between having what you need on hand at any time that you need it, but then also maximizing the offshore resources. And I think that's what Massachusetts is doing.
Matt, is that answer satisfactory to your group?
I don't really have an answer for that. Certainly, we feel that energy conservation is pretty low-hanging fruit, and that this power line is being built, you know, it's a for-profit power line that's being built to benefit Massachusetts. And I think, as you've heard from me, you know, the communities where this new corridor would be built are really concerned about the economic losses that we're gonna have and what this is gonna do to our local economy and, you know, to the recreational resource that exists there. The Kennebec River is one of the most likely rivers on the East Coast to be nominated for a National Wild and Scenic River on this one stretch. The resource that's there is incomparable on the East Coast. People come from all over the place to experience that, and I just don't think that it's a lot to ask that just a little more than 5% of that total length of that river is left unadulterated when there are other options of places to route this cable. I mean, Harris Station is right there. You could cross at Harris Station. I'm certain that there's other places. Vermont has this pretty much pre-permitted, and John can correct me if I'm wrong, if the TDI New England power line isn't ready to go. That runs under Lake Champlain. Vermont has welcomed it. Like we're being sold out. It seems like we're being sold out for the cheapest bid, and that's hard for small towns to accept.
Thanks, Matt, and thanks, John, for your call. We have an email from Bob. Please ask Mr. Carroll about payments to UMass Lowell for research. Why not UMaine? also payments to low-income Massachusetts ratepayers?
Sure. First off, CMP and Avangrid are strong supporters of the University of Maine system, and we always have been, and we will continue that. As part of our proposal to the state of Massachusetts, we had to provide certain benefits within the state, and because of the fact that our project is not going to be built in Massachusetts, the jobs, the taxes, all and the boost to our economy, that all stays in Maine. We needed to provide, to balance our proposal against other proposals, some benefits that were very clear in Massachusetts. Our choice of UMass Lowell, we actually think is complementary to our the activities we support in Maine. We are supporting energy investigation and through their engineering program. What can we help there in Massachusetts in terms of forwarding the use of more advanced and efficient energy technologies? In terms of the low-income benefit, that was also a requirement, that we had to be able to demonstrate a low-income benefit in Massachusetts. Because we're not working in Massachusetts, we added money for Massachusetts. But it's important to recognize it's $50 million, which is a lot of money, over 40 years. $50 million over 40 years. In Maine, in the first year this line is operational, we will pay $40 million. We will provide a $40 million benefit to ratepayers in lower energy costs, and we'll pay $18 million in taxes. So almost $60 million in year one versus $50 million over 40 years. We think there's a lot of benefit in Maine there. And also, obviously, there are discussions then, and perhaps there'll be other benefits that will develop as well.
And Barry, this is something you're working on,
yes,
correct?
Yes, I am. It's interesting you say that, because all of a sudden I'm looking at, it was a confidential document, became public on, I believe, July 25th. I saw the document. I was somewhat stunned. $50 million, and that was going to go to low-income Massachusetts residents, ratepayers, and we hadn't had one dime, not a penny, offered by the Central Maine Power Company. So I said, I put the objective to get $50 million, not a penny less, and have it benefit a low-income group of low-income individuals, and also to take a look to see whether or not the host communities, the host counties, could receive some type of benefit. And quite frankly, we've made that pitch. Central Maine Power Company is considering it, and we're going to continue to look for $50 million and not a penny less.
All right. Well, that's going to have to be our last word in this very quick hour. Thank you all for being here. That was Barry Hobbins, the public advocate for the state of Maine. Matt Wagner was also on the program. He's with the Say No Coalition. And John Carroll, director of corporate communications for Avangrid Central Maine Power. For those of you interested, that public hearing that we talked about is tomorrow at 5 p.m. in Hollowell at the PUC office at 101 2nd Street. John Keimel ran the board today. We had additional help from Rich Tozier in our Bangor studio. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Understanding Loneliness. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.